This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Well, hello, everybody, and hello, Vince. Welcome back to the campfire.
It's great to be back.
It is.
Wheel out the marshmallows.
Wheel out the marshmallows. Wheel out whatever else.
Maybe some damper.
Some damper. I love damper. I don't like the white stuff all over my face. I was going to say any white stuff on my face usually is something else, but
you can toss a lot more than damper.
Yeah, and I'm also going to stop right there because that can maybe sound a bit weird.
Don't try this at home, kids.
Don't try this at home. Now, we've got a hard, what's the time now? 20 past three. You've got a meeting at 4:30.
Correct.
So we've got like a hard hour for this camp.
So I can wolf my marshmallows.
So we're not putting any more timber on the fire. Okay, Vince. Now, for those who are new to the podcast, my name's Glenn James. This is Vince Scully. He's a regular on the show. He runs a business called Life Sherpa. And if you're an old hand at the podcast, we wheel Vince in when we've got hard questions or we've had these kind of deep dive campfire chats where I just chew the fat with Vince. I would say at the outset, it is more of a intermediate to advanced type chat. We're not going to park and explain.
About year eight.
About year eight, yeah. We're not going to park and explain the acronym of an ETF, but, you know, we're just going to talk as if we would talk over a coffee, which I haven't had my third one today yet, Vince. So.
No Glee coffee today.
No Glee coffee today. Now, in recent times, if you have been following personal financial finfluencers,
Finfluencers.
All that personal finance goodness online. There's been a bit of discussion about robo-advice. So I think it's very misunderstood. And to really understand it, I think you need to almost, and I'm not trying to patronize the listener.
Just one.
Just patronizing you or me. Yeah, or the one listener. It's almost like you need to just first start to understand legislated financial advice, what ASIC say financial advice is, what scaled advice is. So I think if we start there, then we can kind of go back, Vince, and then talk about how we get to robo-advice.
That sounds good.
So I don't know. Like, do you have any comments initially on getting financial advice from a traditional financial planning business and how that process works and then what ASIC say is advice and what isn't advice?
Yeah, I think it's worth just stopping for a moment and thinking, but what is the problem we're trying to solve here when we go to invest? So with the internet, you know, it's become so easy to go and buy whatever investment is that you think you want to buy. And there's a very limited number of things you can invest in. It's really shares, bonds, cash, property,
Bitcoin, crypto,
and NTFs.
NTFs. All the good stuff.
All those digital beanie babies. But between having some money to invest and making that decision, there's a lot of confusion, thought needs to be done. So how do I actually take this $10,000 and what do I actually buy?
Yeah, there's this chasm of confusion.
A chasm of confusion. Yeah, sure. So traditionally, when people weren't talking about $10,000, they were talking about $100,000, they would have wandered down the road to the local stockbroker or the local financial advisor and be given a tailored portfolio. The internet sort of taken away some of that friction, and now we have you can buy managed funds, you can buy Vanguard, you can sign up with a robo-advisor, you can buy a managed fund with a fancy app in front of it with a spaceship logo and
or a Razor logo.
Or a Razor logo. And
I don't even know what the Razor logo is, but whatever.
And that comes with the need to get some help in doing that. So many people turn to Uncle Bob at the barbecue. They listen to podcasts and get the best possible advice. And
best possible general advice.
That's right. Your mileage may vary. And or then go to a tradition advisor. Tradition advisors have been traditionally very expensive because it's, you know, trained people, fancy offers.
Service-based business.
It's a service-based business, and every hour they spend talking to you is an hour they're not spent talking to somewhere else, and there's only 1,800 hours in a year, so it costs money.
Mm.
Technology is helping and hindering.
Mm.
So with the internet, there's no end of information out there. But to try and distill that into the insights that says, here's what I do with this $10,000 in my circumstances, that's where we start getting what comes under the regulations as financial advice.
Mm.
And at its simplest, financial advice is simply a statement that's likely to influence someone's decision to buy or sell financial products.
So
which
all
is
the,
pretty broad.
So, okay, so if I'm a finfluencer out there, Vince, mm-hmm. and I say, hey, everyone, let's talk about super.
Hashtag Glenn Invests.
Yeah, like have I, because I've got a TikTok account now, Vince.
Do you? You a TikToker.
I forget what my name is, but if I say, hi, guys, it's Glenn's TikTok, and I start talking
don't
about-
Don't you have to dance and have music to do that?
Yeah. And if I start dancing about superannuation and talking about superannuation, as ASIC like to put it, I have crossed-
The Rubicon.
The threshold.
Crossed the Hawkesbury.
Because I am talking about a product class-
Yeah.
And giving my opinion.
Yep. Starting to smell like advice.
So if I'm- if I've got a Finfluencer account- And I say, hey, peeps, here's a review of this platform, for example.
And you give it 4.5 rubber chickens.
And I give it 4.5 stars out of 5. That's an opinion. So ASIC say that's financial advice.
Yep.
Because I've given my opinion on it.
Yep.
So we're a-
Next question is that advice that needs a license? And that's where it starts getting really grey.
And, you know, I've shared previously- that I've decided to take the higher ground and pay for a general advice license. So all the My Millennial Money stuff we do, there's a financial services guide on our website. Mm-hmm.
Which everyone reads and downloads.
Absolutely. So, but to the advice thing, so I can get advice anywhere. I can go to TikTok.
Yep.
I can go to Instagram, I can go to a podcast. It could be rubbish advice, but it's still technically advice.
It is.
And so rewind back to I go to my financial planning office, traditional 101 financial planning office. We sit down or Zoom, we do the dance, we consider your personal information, circumstances. We provide a customized document.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, we recommend you do this, this, and this. Here's a statement of advice.
Yep. And here's how we'll help you implement it. And here's how we'll keep you on track over the next few years.
Yeah.
And traditionally, that's been an expensive purchase. And so now with technology, some elements of that are being automated.
Question. I saw in the group the other day, someone said, oh, I got a quote for $3,500 for financial advice. Why is that shocking? Where I paid $2,000 to have my Mitsubishi air conditioner installed in my house.
Well, that's pretty cool.
And I won't excuse the pun. But like, so if I'm happy to pay $2,000 for the guy to come in and install my air conditioner, happy for my house to be cool to make comfortable, why does it irk me if I have to pay $3,500 to get sound advice for my future?
Yeah. I think part of the way we behave as humans is I can feel cool tonight with my Mitsubishi air conditioner. Mm. I can see it. I can touch it.
I paid extra for the integration to Google Home. So on the way home, I can go, yes.
Go, hey, Google.
Yeah, don't.
Crank it up.
Yeah, set it to 24.
And advice that's not going to be evident that it's worked for months, years, or decades, it's a difficult thing for our monkey brains to get around.
Because non-tangible, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
And
I just thought of that analogy, like, I don't get my back out of place if I'm paying $2,000 for this or a $3,000 hot tub to put on my deck. Not that I've got that, but it's just
planning a holiday, you walk into a travel agent, travel agent gets 5 to 10% of whatever you spend. That's not a problem. But we are hardwired for short-term gratitude, gratification, and getting a better future is a pretty hard thing for us to put a real handle on. Go, I've got $2,000 in my pocket. Do I go buy some advice or do I go buy a Mitsubishi air conditioner? And pretty hard to make that decision. So part of that means that advice has largely been limited to older people. So two-thirds of all financial planning clients are over 55 and people with more money. And generally, the ordinary podcast listener is left out in the dark.
And I will say, like, I was being dramatic there for that example, and it is – and this is the whole thing, like
– Oh, you mean it wasn't a Mitsubishi air conditioner?
It was definitely a Mitsubishi. But, I mean, my whole thing with, you know, we were talking, Bricklet have come on the tour that we're doing and trying to explain something that's new. It's just so – like, it's legitimate, but it's so hard to grasp because it's not in my day-to-day. And, you know, I'll say it before and I'll say it again, like, you know, rocking up with an electric car, oh, wow, I can't fathom how that could work. Well, no, it's been around forever. Technology is solid. It's just not in your day-to-day. So it's a legitimate question, but I think the legitimate answer is, yes, there has, you know, there's been a lot of cleaning up in the financial advice world. And I dare say 99.95% of advisors out there are not sharks and dodgy and are out to rip you off.
That's right.
Like, it's the legitimate cost of business.
Yeah.
So I just want to kind of say, like, yes, understanding the financial advice, and it just, you need to understand how that world works before you can start to talk to robo-advice.
Yeah, I think you need to understand what question you're trying to answer. So the robo-advice, which really is just a robot plus advice equals robo-advice, and really it just means it's automated advice. And so rather than trying to answer the answer to everything, which as we all know is 42 or Vanguard, and slim it down to, I've got $10,000, what do I invest it in? And it answers that question very simply by looking at your goals, your time frame, and your risk profile, and putting you in one of a hand, or recommending one of a handful of pre-mixed portfolios. And that's a very, that's a relatively straightforward question for a computer to answer. The bigger questions is, you know, should I pay off my home loan, invest, or put money in super? Much more complicated question, very difficult for a computer to answer that question.
I guess my point is, if I went to a financial advisor and said, I don't want any other advice, I don't want the platinum package and all that stuff, I've got $10,000, tell me where to invest it. So really specific, that would be considered scaled advice.
That's right.
So I would issue a statement of advice document, which is kind of considered scaled advice, which it's rubbish because every advice document is scaled advice.
I must admit, I'm not a fan of the way these words have developed. You know, you've got limited scope advice, you've got scaled advice, you've got robo advice, you've got full scale advice. Well, it's all advice. The question is, you've got to ask, what question am I trying to answer? And to answer your question about, I've got $10,000, where do I invest it? You can get the stripped back version, which says, which of these six portfolios should I choose if I've got $10,000?
Of our portfolios.
Of the ones that we happen to have put together.
Yeah.
Or do I want a general view that takes into account, well, I've got $10,000 today, but I'm putting in $500 a month, so I need to consider my transaction costs going forward. I need to think about when I might want to get back. I think I might want to look broader than the six pre-mixed portfolios. That's now cranking up the advice to not which of these six should I buy, but should I invest and where should I invest?
Well, then it goes down to tax structures,
yep,
and all the things that matter. But I guess I wanted to say, if you go to that advisor and said, you know, I don't want debt management advice, don't just tell me this, there's going to be a baseline threshold to turn on the statement of advice factory.
Yep.
So there's going to be a minimum cost for me to rock up and have a meeting with you and all that.
And at Life Sherpa, that's $4.99.
Yes. So there you go, everyone. You can go to Vince, tell him I sent you. So this kind of gets to the crux with this robo-advice. You know, there was commentary, it's not really advice and all that. Well, it is.
It is advice.
It's just advice on where do I put my money. And they'll issue a statement of advice.
It's a very simple, restricted piece of advice going, here's my $10,000, which of these six should I choose?
Yeah. Now, in Australia, the two main quote-unquote robo-advisors, you've got StockSpot. Have you met Chris?
Yep.
I added him on LinkedIn the other day. I want to get him on the podcast because I think pretty dialed in.
Yep.
Like he's a straight shooter.
He's a media superstar.
He is. You've got StockSpot and Six Park. Now,
and probably Clover.
Yes. So I think you need to know that when you go to this robo advisor, they will never replace. For the financial advisors out there listening, you'll always have a job because the robo advisors won't ever see the husband or the wife or the partner or whatever sitting there squirming in their seat.
Yep.
Because they're strapped in for the ride of the partner who wants to do this.
Exactly.
So it's just an execution thing. Now, if we want to turn it up a notch, you look at Raise. So if you look at Raise and StockSpot or Six Park, they are all pre-mixed options, right?
Yeah. And the only real distinction between Raise and StockSpot or Six Park is that Raise will not tell you which of the six portfolios to choose.
Thank you. So they looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, all that stuff, but the robo-advisor is a little less ducky. I don't know where I'm going here, but they will tell you to invest here based on the questions we've asked you, and they'll provide you with a formal statement of advice.
Which says, you've told us this about you. This is the information we've relied on, and therefore we recommend portfolio B for these reasons.
Yes. Now, that advice document is legal. It's, you know, you could sue them and say, I've provided this statement of advice. It was misleading or whatever. Because this is the crap thing about the advice world, Vince. You can issue crap advice that's compliant.
All right. Sort of.
I've seen the amount of crap that I've seen that's compliant. Like, go with me, like, self-managed super fund, you know, buy these unlisted properties, it's all in prop. Like, sure, it's compliant, quote unquote, because they've ticked the boxes, but the strategy sucks.
Yeah. And you know, whilst that may tick all of the boxes, the underlying advice still has to be in your best interests and leave you better off.
Mm.
And you can have the most compliant documentation around it, but if it fails that basic test, I think that's a real problem.
Mm. So moving to this robo-advice, and this is, I guess, what I'm getting at. You can't actually really compare StockSpot, Six Park with Raise or Spaceship. Or ComSec.
Correct.
Or SelfWealth or Open Trader.
Yeah.
Because they're actually different offerings.
Yeah. So there's four different products you've just rattled off there.
Exactly.
They all tend to get thrown about in the same sentence. But, you know, ComSec, SelfWealth, Superhero, Perler.
Open Trader.
They're brokers. So what they're going to do is take your order.
They're just executing a trade.
Send it to the stock exchange for execution.
Pretty simple.
That is simple. Obviously, the decision as to what share I buy, when and at what price, and how long I hold it for, that's the secret sauce. But all of those products are simply taking your order and funneling it into the market. You can step up from there to a managed fund, which is Spaceship.
Or MIS.
Or a managed
investment scheme. Scheme.
Or a collective investment vehicle in the industry.
Jeez.
A CIV. But that is a structure which pulls the money from lots of smaller investors and invests in an underlying portfolio of shares. In the case of Spaceship, that's a highly concentrated portfolio.
So Spaceship's an unlisted managed fund.
It's an unlisted managed investment scheme with a fancy app in the front of it.
Sign me up, baby.
Mm.
I've been sold.
And now that has its place. And being a managed investment scheme comes with a number of protections and a number of downsides. It means they've got a license from ASIC to operate a scheme. The scheme is registered. The scheme is audited. They've got some checks and balances around.
Does what's on the box.
It does precisely what's on the box. The
never used to.
It's true. The downside, of course, is that in the event that the underlying markets were illiquid, you might not get your money back for a while. It comes with some costs and it comes with some tax implications of other people's behaviour.
I want to park that.
Yep. Six park it.
I want to six park that because we're going to compare this. But I just want to, for those who, you know, haven't listened to our ramblings before, when I joked with Spaceship and what was on the box, mm-hmm. you know, does what is on the box, and I joked and said it never used to, mm-hmm. because when they launched, excuse the pun.
Failure to launch.
They said, we will actively invest in the world's tech companies that are going to the moon.
However, their knuckles wrapped by the regulator for that.
And they got fined because, and don't quote me on this, but I think maybe over or around 50% of the fund was an index fund.
Mm-hmm. So over-egging the pudding.
So ASIC said, tut, 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 don't say you actively choose the sexy investments when you've got a bloody index fund. Yeah. So give us $12,000, fix it and move on.
Yeah. And if we can't rely on what people are telling us in their ads, that is a sad day. You know, truth in advertising, is that really too much to hope for?
Apparently. Okay, so Spaceship, the managed fund. So we've got the brokers over here, which are just executing your instructions. Next step, you know, you raise and your Spaceship and, you know, we'll pre-mix and just make it easy for you. You still choose, but you get the consolidated tax statement and it's a portfolio in a box.
Yeah. So with Spaceship, you choose A or B.
Yep.
I think there might be C now.
Yeah, I forgot it.
Yeah, so you got Universe, Earth, and
I don't know. Is there an Emerald League one, like Rays?
Whatever the third one's called. You then can, I would say, step up to Rays, which.
Controversial.
And by step up, I mean add some functionality.
Yeah.
And so Rays gives you many of the advantages of pooling your money, access on an app. But what you're getting is your own little bit of the underlying portfolio.
Mm.
So you choose.
Like it when you talk dirty to me.
So you pick the Emerald portfolio. Is the Emerald an app?
Yeah, I think it's the Emerald one.
So pick an Emerald portfolio. You actually get your own little bit of that that they're holding for you.
Nice of them.
Yeah, which is solves the tax problem with the managed investment schemes to an extent. So you're now not exposed to the behavior.
So as an example, if I own $10,000 in Spaceship, a big shareholder who might own $1 million in Spaceship says, I want to withdraw, and they have to sell down to pay that person out.
Yep. You're going to get a tax bill.
Because of their tax consequences.
That's right.
So you don't really have your own mandate.
Correct. Whereas with a raise, you do. So you're saying, in effect, you're saying to raise, I want you to buy a little bit of each one of those ETFs in the portfolio for me and keep them safe for me.
Mm.
So you're not exposed to what other raise investors do. So it doesn't matter how many people come and go out of raise. And so you've solved that problem. But keep in mind that the underlying assets are actually ETFs, which are managed investment schemes in their own right.
Mm.
So you are, to an extent, exposed to the behaviour of other investors.
Jeez, I might just grab this tinfoil hat I've got behind here.
So, and ETFs have solved some of that problem compared to normal managed investment schemes. So, without labouring that point, the results from the raise structure should give you a better result than the same assets held in the raise structure, in the spaceship structure. Now, they're not the same assets, and the difference in the assets, or the difference in the behaviour of the assets, will cause a much bigger difference than these minor structural differences.
And it's a closed shop. You're looking at me like you want me to explain that.
Yeah. Because you can't buy stuff at a closed shop, can you?
Well, you can, but you're stuck in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say to Spaceship, I don't want to be part of your platform anymore. They'll say, well, that's fine. Sell down and piss off.
That's right.
Where it might lead to this robo-advice thing. And a lot of these robo-advisors use what we call MDAs.
Yep. So stepping up now from raise to a Six Park or a stocks bond. Again, you've got six basic portfolios, but now they're adding in, they will provide you advice as to which of those six you should buy for your circumstances.
And you pay for that quote-unquote advice. Not that it is quote-unquote advice, because it's actually advice.
It is actually advice.
You pay for that advice with either the $10 a month fee.
Yep.
And then because they pay you a because they provide you with some consolidated reporting at the end of the year and you are effectively on a platform, if you will, they will provide you with a consolidated tax statement at the end of the year.
That's right.
So what's the problem? I'm getting what I pay for. I'm getting advice. I'm getting rebalanced every quarter having to pay brokerage. And I'm getting a statement at the end of the year with no drama. And the underlying investments are CHESS sponsored. So what's the problem?
Apart from cost, very little.
But I'm paying for the advice.
That's right.
Yeah. So there's no real problem because if I understand, I get what I pay for.
That's right. You are the difference, and in fact, I'm not sure there's very much difference in cost when you add it all up, that what you're paying for is the underlying portfolio. Mm. So that's the same cost that you would pay to hold.
So, for example, the Six Park portfolio, they're a blend of ETFs across the asset classes.
Correct.
So they're going to have Australian equities, they're going to have international equities, and so on and so forth.
So assuming that, I don't know which ETFs do, but let's assume that they get their US exposure by using iShares IVV.
Yeah.
The IVV you buy through Six Park is the same IVV you would buy direct, but you don't have the minimum parcel limitation, so you don't have to start with $500. You don't have to worry about brokerage because they are trading in bigger chunks and you get all that reporting.
The kicker with, you know, these stock spots, and I actually don't know if there's a minimum for stock spot, but Six Park, they're saying you got to have $5,000.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's probably just a practical limitation that, you know, if you got less than $5,000, is it really worth paying for advice? Once you get to 10, or you've got $10,000 and you're investing $500 a month, now you really do need advice because there's a lot more at stake.
Mm.
If you're starting off with $50 or $100,
but I don't know if they charge you that $10 a month just to have money in the cash account.
I'm not even sure you can have a cash account on its own. I think you have to be invested or not invested.
No, you get a Macquarie CMA with Six Park.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I've got one of those. I've had one for years. Great accounts.
I've been meaning to get one.
And those black credit cards. Ooh.
I don't use credit cards, Vince.
Mm-hmm.
No, but I mean, I just wanted to kind of just unpack that it's a progression. And there's an old saying that came out of England a billion years ago called horses for courses, which basically means, you know, if it's a wet track, throw the horse on that track that's suited to that one and it'll do better.
Yeah. So, I mean, my take on it is if you're just starting out, you got your emergency stash, you got your debts paid off, and you got 50 or 100 bucks to spare, something like a razor or a spaceship will teach you a lesson that's worth the price of admission.
Mm.
And that lesson is how you behave when you see the market on your phone every day going up and down. And if it goes up and you feel like you're the next Warren Buffett, then maybe investing is not for you.
Here's a lesson. Mm. Don't have the freaking app on your phone and just check it every 6 months or a year.
But that, you know, at the starting point, seeing your $50 become $50.20 is an experience that you can learn from before it's $50,000 going up to $50,200. And those apps do a really good job of that. And they come with a little bit of education, so they're good. The big plus for Raise in my book is, apart from not lying to their customers, is the rewards.
Mm.
That the booking.com award on its own is worth the $3.50 a month.
Really? Should I get a Raise account?
You should get a Raise account.
Interesting.
Your mileage may vary. Fees, terms, conditions, apply, read the PDS.
Et cetera.
And then when you've got some real money, now it's time to start getting some real advice because it really matters.
Yeah, because the whole thing is, if you're confident enough to know that you want Vanguard Diversified Growth Fund or Vanguard Diversified High Growth Fund, well, go bloody buy it. Go on. See ya. But if you want to be told and you want to actually get advice of, I don't know what to invest in, well, you're going to have to pay for advice because a podcast can't tell you, an Instagram can't tell you.
And especially TikTok can't tell you.
Especially TikTok can't tell you. And the question is, do you want to pay $1,600 with a bricks and mortar financial advisor? You might want to.
Yep.
Awesome. Or do you want to pay $10 a month and a platform fee with SixPark? And I don't even know how much StockSpot is, because within that fee, it's not only the advice that they provide. And this is why I'm a bit of a fan of the MDAs, Vince.
They As opposed to MDMA.
Yeah. Whew. Wild night. Or the Special K. Yeah. You know, it is their IP that you're paying for.
You are.
Because they say that we believe our portfolios do better than the other ones.
And they got Nobel Prizes to prove it.
And all that stuff. So you are paying for advice. You are paying for their IP with their strategic asset allocation.
Yeah. And remember, the cost of not taking advice could be a lot more than the cost of the advice. And you'll never know how much it is.
Mm.
So, you know, the internet's made things deceptively simple. So four little letters, the VDHG being, or VDG.
GR or HG, yeah.
Being the answer that springs out most from the internet. It's deceptively simple. You know, one little trade and your future's set.
Mm.
But what are you buying? Do you understand what's in there?
Mm.
Have you consciously made the decision that I want to hedge my part of my overseas share exposure into Australian dollars?
Mm.
So people talk about indexing being passive investing. There's nothing passive about it. You're making an active choice.
With the asset allocation.
You're making an active choice for your asset allocation. You're making an active choice to hedge some of your overseas exposure. You're making an active decision to invest in the ASX 300, which is heavily dominated by banks.
Mm.
Now, none of those decisions are necessarily bad or wrong, but if you're making them or not making them or making them by default, then those decisions could actually end up costing you a lot more than a little bit of advice.
We're going to take a quick break and I'm going to come back and ask you a question about building a portfolio.
Ooh, portfolio.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
All right, we're back. Now, before I ask you the question about building portfolio, I guess just with this understanding how all these brokers work and the Spaceship and the Raise and Six Park and StockSpot, and maybe I'm in a personal finance echo chamber with like the M3 account on Instagram. So I'm seeing all these like I go to my explore page and there's all these personal finance influencers because they all follow the M3 account.
At Glenn Invests.
Actually, hang on, Vince. Let's see what my
At Weird Women Finance.
No. My TikTok is called at Get Invested with Glenn. I've got 24 followers. I got 24 followers, baby. Watch
am I one of them?
I don't know, but watch out, the sisters, the Emilio sisters, whatever they are.
At Silver Fox 62.
Yeah, basically. So when Victoria did this thing with Six Park, if you want to go there, she got a bit of heat around comparing it to financial advice and accessibility.
And we're not talking about Queen Victoria here.
Not at all. There's another.
She's on the money.
We're talking about. She's on the money. You know, you're all thinking go there. So let's go there, Vince. Stuff it. Cards on the table.
Are we going to get beaten up by the woke police for this?
We are. So Victoria, good friend of mine, talked to her a lot. She copped some criticism around her own fee disclosure. Sure, not going there. I don't comment on other people how they run their business. I will comment, though, on the misunderstanding of comparing that to normal advice because it is actually formal financial advice. So, therefore, it's actually cheap. There was commentary and I don't even know. And if you're listening, I'm not having a go at you individually because I've seen a lot of different takes on this and I forget who did it, to be honest. But like formal advice doesn't necessarily mean cash flow and budgeting.
That's right.
It doesn't necessarily mean this. So it is actually a way that you can get accessible financial advice for $10 a month.
That's right.
And not pay the brokerage on the rebalance every quarter.
Yeah.
So back to my thing, what's the problem?
Yeah. What are you actually looking for and is this the right price to pay for it? I mean, I think the real problem here, though, is around disclosure rather than the quality of the commentary that as long as everyone knows what's going on and everyone knows that it costs money to run a podcast and media has to be paid for, that and if you're not paying for it, you are the product. So if we all know what is being paid and that people don't start hiding it, then that's all good. And as you say, the difference between buying some, you know, going down to CommSec and placing an order directly in the market and putting your money into Six Park, they're two different things. And one comes with a device and the other one doesn't. And you're going to pay for that.
I also, and this is just my view, and there's some people, and they probably will listen to these. Hi, guys, if you're listening, you probably know who you are, whatever. I've got some criticism for saying it's okay to pay fees.
Well, I think you should be more worried if you're not paying fees.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, fees matter. They matter a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But for me, I think, you know, people say, oh, I just want to buy Vanguard, so I'll just do it on CommSec. Awesome. If Glenn James is personally just buying Vanguard, I'm using the Vanguard Personal Investor because I don't want to do the reporting.
Like, I mean, are you going to spend that time keeping your spreadsheet of your
and this goes back to your soft dollars?
Yeah.
So I'm actually okay to pay 0.2% to have that service.
Yeah. I mean, I get people arguing about whether I should buy VTS because it's one basis point cheaper than IVV or vice versa.
Mm.
Okay. The difference between IVV and VTS is far more than one basis point in fees. And at that point, fees are irrelevant.
Mm.
And sure, you shouldn't be paying 2% or 3%, but the difference between paying 0.08 and 0.07%, the underlying investment difference will be way bigger.
Here's one for you, Vince. I saw in a group the other day, someone was like, oh, I can't wait till Vanguard set up their super fund in Australia. It's going to be the cheapest.
They actually don't have a license yet, by the way, guys.
Yeah. Chill out, everyone. My comments are, Vince, running a super fund and being a trustee, you're not going to get super fees of 0.36 or whatever.
Mm, correct.
You're probably going to be looking at your normal ETF cost plus at least the 0.2.
Yep.
And probably more for the trustee stuff.
Mm.
Because
it just costs money and there's risk and there's licensing and there's insurance and there's capital.
But this guy, and I assume it's a guy, he said, oh, fees matter and, you know, paying that, you know, it could be 400 grand over the course of your lifetime. I said to him, and he didn't reply, which is fine, but I said, well, me buying breakfast and lunch at a cafe every single day is probably costing me $500,000-$700,000 in retirement.
Yep.
But because I know and I'm aware of the trade-off, what's the problem?
And the truth is that the 80% of super funds are between 0.8 and 1.2%. And within that range, probably not something to get overly excited about. There are much bigger things to worry about than fees. And if you look at the APRA data on super funds, there is zero correlation between fees and returns. That's not to say that fees don't matter, but you got to be comparing like with like first. And the number one determinant of returns is asset allocation. And some assets cost more than others to manage. So make sure you're comparing funds with the same asset allocation.
Well, you know how I'm writing a book.
Really?
Yeah. You proofed that chapter that was 20,000 words. Actually, they wrote, last night they wrote to me and said, oh, we're going to split that chapter up into two.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's wise.
Because that'll cut down the word count.
Yeah, absolutely. actually, I talked in the chapter, Vince, and I used an example of a super fund that is one of the cheapest in Australia.
It's one of those funds that sleeps, isn't it? It's resting.
Yes, it's the resting.
It's resting.
No, it's not the resting one.
No?
It's the other one.
Ah, the other one.
That if I'm a hospitality worker or if I'm a chef, I might use it. And if you would have used the cheapest fee option in comparison to the fee that was 1%, you over the last 10 years, you would have been worse off. Because the index fund that was 0.2 of a bee's dick percentage didn't have any asset allocation to infrastructure, property, alternate assets.
That's right.
And then, but that leads into the other discussion. What are they doing behind the scenes with the with the unlisted assets? So,
but it's not the same fund and you would expect it to behave differently.
Mm.
And what you've done is you've cut out the expensive to manage asset classes. So, yes, the fees should go down.
Mm.
But
the returns,
almost certainly your return will too. So that's a different argument to...
Do you reckon they're just loading up the fee of the other one to subsidise the business?
I'll wash your mouth out, boy. I wouldn't say that. Many would, but I wouldn't.
I mean...
And you might find yourself in the federal court if you did say that publicly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Some people would say.
I would not say that, hypothetically, or whatever the thing is.
That's right. But where was I going?
No, I don't even know.
You've lost me now.
At this point, we've got about 5 minutes, and I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm. Shall I answer your question?
I would like you to comment on it. Now, we all know that, and I'm not having a go at finfluencers. Like, I love them. Mm. I'm friends with a lot of them.
You are one.
Wow. I don't call myself a finfluencer, Vince, please.
Well, you're too old and not female.
I'm old, yeah. I'm a wash up. However, you can't produce enough content when you've got a good social media presence, because mm-hmm. we all love just consuming content.
Yep.
There are, you know, the influencers, they share their pie chart of this is what I'm investing in and all this stuff. And actually, oops, dropped my water. I wrote this in my book that we know that on balance, if you're an individual stock selector and a trader, you're basically going to suck long term.
Yep. All the research will support that.
Yeah. So, sorry. And I like, but to be honest, I love listening to Equity Mates podcasts and all that stuff. Like, love it. I just don't allocate more than 10% of my net worth to individual stocks.
I mean, investing should not be exciting.
No.
If you want excitement, go to the casino or buy Bitcoin.
Exactly. Might have done both. So we know that individual stock selection, if you're building your own portfolio, the data says you're going to suck.
Yep.
Okay. So why do people share their pie graph and say, I use VAS, I use VTS, I use IVV, I use FAIR, I use BEAR, I use all this? I would hypothesize that if an individual stock selector sucks, an individual person making their own strategic asset allocation is also going to suck.
I think if you're trying to vary your strategic asset allocation to do what's called tactical asset allocation.
I know that for a little
that
while.
That is moving it around a bit. If you say, oh, I'm going to go long overseas shares because I think the Australian dollar is going to fall. Well, now you're an active investor and we know that active underperforms passive. So don't kid yourself that market timing asset allocation on ETFs is any different from market timing.
Individual stocks.
Yeah, you're just doing it with more of the same. So,
but I guess it's not sexy to share my pie graph and saying I've got 100% asset allocation to BetaShares diversified portfolio.
That's right.
But that's not sexy.
No, it doesn't generate clicks.
So,
I mean, I'm not sure I'm a fan of this whole here's my net worth. Because what
is different generation?
Yeah, but what does net worth
to be frank?
What does net worth actually mean? I mean, forget the voyeurism of wanting to see what someone else's net worth is. There's so many different ways you can count it. You know, do you count your house in it? Do you count your super in it? Do you only count assets that you could generate some income?
Well, I think they count everything.
Yeah. Well, is that meaningful? To me, net worth is a directional measure. That what I focus on is not its absolute number, but which way it's moving.
Trending even.
Yeah, or trending.
You're welcome.
So, for example, you know, if you have $100,000 in or $200,000 in cash or in VAS for that matter, and you go and buy a house, well, that day your net worth's just gone backwards by $50,000 because you just paid stamp duty and legal fees. So, and should I count the house at the price I could realize it for after deducting agents' fees and marketing costs? So it just gets such a complicated
thing. Yeah, I just think it's, you know, the bloggers, they do it. It's just what they did. One of the common things that's frequently searched online is Glenn James' net worth. Mm-hmm. You should ask me what my net worth is.
What is your net worth, Glenn?
None of your business.
Precisely. Not only is it not relevant, it's a meaningless number. Why does
I live a good life?
Yeah, but you live on the Central Coast.
It's true.
And drive a Lexus.
That's true. They're two very good things, let me tell you.
But why is comparing myself to Glenn James a positive thing? Because I'm going to get two answers. One, he's got more than I have, and I'm going to feel shit. Or two, I'm going to find out I've got more than he has, and I'm going to feel self-satisfied and smug. How do either of those help make the world a better place?
I just think it's, you know, if you're 20 years old and you got 150 grand, it's going to make you stand out.
Well, the fact that it's positive is a good start.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, most 22-year-olds have negative net worth.
Yeah. It was funny. I think I've shared this before. One of my first bigger clients from the accounting joint venture that I had in the city, and I was like 27 years old, so I'd only had my own business a couple of years.
Last year.
Last year. And this lady came in, you know, 60-year-old executive, like high net worth. And she said to me, why should I take advice from you, like if you've got less than me?
Mm-hmm.
And I calmly said, well, you've had a few more years with respect to earn a dollar, but I can tell you compared to my friends and peers, I'm worth about 10 times plus more than them.
I mean, this whole concept of you should only take advice from people who've been there is a very dangerous money myth. I mean, there's a very good reason why Roger Federer has a coach who's never played a Grand Slam or even had a tennis ranking. That it's, you know, it's about you want someone who is qualified to give you the advice that you need.
Well, it's that perspective.
Yeah.
He can stand behind Roger serving where Roger can't see whatever.
Yeah. So the so if you go to and this is particularly problematic in real estate where most of the big spruikers will go, I've got a portfolio of 40 properties. And you go, well, actually, if you make your living out of real estate and you've invested all your net worth in real estate, do you actually understand diversification and risk? And should I really be taking advice from you? But you go to the internet and what's the first piece of advice you're going to get is always take advice from someone who's been there. And that could actually be the most dangerous piece of advice you ever get.
Yeah, it's funny. I've wrestled with this and I think it's true to a point. So, for example, if I ran a health and fitness podcast.
You don't want to be fat.
I don't want to be overweight. Well, my BMI is over. You know what I mean? Like there is that level of optics.
At least it's not my millennial personal trainer.
I know. It'd be wild. However, I would say, you know, as one of the myths, like don't take your financial advice from broke people.
Yeah, but that's a long way from I've got 40 properties, therefore you should buy property.
Yes, absolutely. But I guess what I'm getting at is, would you let the orthopedic surgeon operate on your ankle if he or she has never operated on their own ankle? And of course you would.
Of course you would.
So, and that's what I mean. So it is this.
Yeah. I mean, you
like,
want to make
I'm experienced in retiring because I've retired lots of people in their 60s. Like I've retired a lot on behalf of other people. So it is that tipping point.
Yeah. So to my mind, in choosing an advisor, the number one thing to look for is, do they look after people like you? And so if you want advice around retirement or retirement income, find an advisor that deals with that. If you are 20-something and you want to work about how do I retire when I'm 30, you want an advisor that understands that. And that probably means someone who understands shares, ETFs, real estate, whatever, and someone who only does one of those is probably not the place you should be looking.
Well, there you have it.
There you go.
I'm going to go to the airport, I think.
We better douse this fire, put the marshmallows away.
Yeah, but like anything, this podcast, it's worth what you pay for it, people.
And it's good night from me.
And it's good night. All right. See ya.
Cheers.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
My Millennial Money supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you would like some other giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.